Hello and welcome to the Volunteer Firefighter Podcast. My name is Ash and I'm joined with two firefighting buddies. I got Scott.
Hey there.
And we got Todd.
Hello and welcome.
Would you like to just keep going?
No, I'm good. I think you got it, big guy.
All right, beautiful. So this week we're going to talk about Fire Prevention Week. But before we dive into that, Todd, you got some news for us.
Yeah, just when we thought forest fire season is wrapping up, just outside of Chetwynd, so in northern BC, there's currently a 570-hectare fire that's burning out of control. They think it started by a lightning strike. Still, it's currently burning away from Chetwynd, but they're worried about the winds shifting. And then, of course, same story as we've had all summer, coming into the city limits. It's pretty close by. So they're keeping a pretty close eye on it, and it sounds like they're hitting it pretty hard with what they have. But at this point in time, no actual evacuation orders or alerts to the city. So that's good.
Yeah, nice. It's crazy. There always seems to be kind of that tail end of the season where something kind of kicks off. So, yeah, I mean, us around here, we get our wildfire danger rating every morning, with our morning dispatch. And, we've been hovering around that, like it dropped from 5 to 4, 4 to 3, 3 to a bunch of twos, and then we got down now to a 1. So things are definitely looking a lot better locally, but yeah, it's I mean, it's still dry out there. If you got something that starts, it still doesn't take much. So definitely need to still be aware of that and be safe when you're out in the bush and up and around here and there as well. It's obviously hunting season, so there's a lot more pressure out in the backcountry. So just being diligent about that, I think, is obviously really important still. And with that, speaking of being really important, we'll go into Fire Prevention Week. So that's what we're coming off of right now, or going into, sorry. Mm-hmm. I know you guys down south have something planned out for your hall. So Todd, why don't you tell us a bit about what you guys got planned?
Yeah, so Fire Prevention Week is October 8th to the 14th. And so this week on Wednesday, we're going to be going to the elementary school, doing a whole bunch of classrooms of, just running through the whole usual thing we do with the young kids, having a fire safety plan, making sure they have, they take the package home with their family, make sure they actually fill everything out, have their little mustering points, their safety plans. We talk a lot about this is a good time to change the batteries in your smoke alarms or make sure you have smoke alarms. A lot of people still don't. Just bringing awareness to it, right? The other big one, too, is a lot of the cooking fires that we always have. We always talk about the grease fires because cooking is actually one of the largest cause of house fires and injuries that we see a lot of. And the classic, somebody takes a cup of water, they panic, and they throw it on the stove and the grease fire, and poof, now you've got this huge flare-up. And yeah, we've actually had a few incidences now the past couple of years where people have gotten burnt from that, and pretty good structure fire. So it's pretty big, pretty important. So we're going to have an open house on Wednesday evening and go through the motions of kind of showing people what to do if they have to have a kitchen fire. We're going to do some extinguisher training for them, have some props out, have some hose lines and some little course for the kids to run as well. Bring awareness to it, right? Bring it up to the forefront of everybody, make sure everybody's talking about it. And then, of course, we always do the fun coloring book stuff as well for the kids in school. And then the winner for the coloring contest for the young kids will be the chief for the day. That's always fun. You usually get a little tour of the hall and take them to school and pick them up in the fire truck. And I know our deputy chief, he's always got a pretty good day of events planned for them, take them out for lunch and stuff. So should be good. We're going to have a barbecue.
Catch a sweet structure fire.
Yeah, hopefully catch a sweet structure fire. Yeah, no, just open house. We're going to sell some stuff, sell some shirts for society and all that fun stuff. So, yeah. How are you guys?
Yeah, nice. We are doing something similar with the kids. One of our members is heading that up. So all of that information has gone out to the schools. And then again, they get to be firefighter for the morning, get picked up, get dropped off at school, Pretty cool event. So kids always love it. You got dropped off by a nice shiny red fire truck. This year, likely they'll get a tour maybe in one of our new ones here. One of, well, in the only new one.
Multiple coming in.
Yeah, so that's always, you know, pretty sweet. I think I was chatting with the missus. I think we're going to come on down and check out your guys's. She's going to grab some photos and some video. I think we'll post, just speaking about the grease fire. I mean, there's a ton of them out there. You can just hit that up on YouTube, but we've got a couple pretty good ones as well of ourselves. So we'll post that up this week about the grease fire, because I mean, just it looks cool. It's big fire off of just a little cup of water, and it always brings a lot of attention to it. So
yeah, that week always reminds me of back when we did a fire prevention week years ago. And I'm giving the talk, and the little kids are like, is it like kindergarten kids? I think it was one of your first years here, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was maybe years ago, but yeah, it was like, I was pretty new.
Yeah. So we were giving the talk, and this kid's like, I said, hey, if you catch fire, what do you, I said, yeah, if you catch fire, what do you do? And I'm looking for stop, drop, and roll. And he's like, I would tell that fire, no, you have no control over me. Get away from me. And I'm like, I think you mean that's a bully. Not a fire. And he's like, oh, yeah.
I'm going to punch that fire in the face. That's awesome. You know what? That's actually one of the funnest things going into the schools, and especially the elementary grades, and doing these kind of events, like having that feedback, like putting the questions out to the kids and seeing what they come up with. It's fantastic. It's always like, hey, who's got a fire safety plan? My daddy's a fireman. Yeah, all these other little questions.
Yeah, I was going to say the exact same thing. I mean, kids have zero filter, and they'll be like, you know, one of them will be like, my uncle's a firefighter or whatever. My whatever is a whatever. And then, oh, you guys have come to my house once prior, and blah, blah, blah. Oh, no, that was just the police. So we're like, what is happening right now?
Yeah, it's always great. And, you know, then there's always the classic question, like, what's it like driving the fire truck? And, you know, what's the biggest fire you've seen? And all these fun questions. So it's a blast. I think the other important thing, too, is I know you guys have done it. I've done it when I was on a member here as well, and we still do it, is gearing up in all of our gear, showing what it looks like to be a firefighter with our masks on, kind of showing what we do. And we do a little search in the room and talking, and just make sure they're not scared and they're approachable. We talk about if there is a fire, where do they go? If they can't get out, what do they do? And the classic, you know, close your doors, right? Close before you doze. So, and then I don't think, unfortunately, we don't have a prop. I would love to have a prop to actually show what a fire would do with the door open and one with a door closed. There's some really good ones out there, some videos on YouTube and stuff, but it's fantastic, and it's very important.
Yeah, there's some pretty good photos that are circling around right now, actually, of a, I think it's a pretty recent fire somewhere in the States. You can see the outside of the building. A couple of firefighters on the outside. I don't know what they're doing, but you can see one room. There's zero activity on the other room. The fire's already pushing out of the window, and it says over top of each of the windows, like, door closed, door open. So that whole close before you doze or close before you goes. And as well, like, every time a Chief Bob has a school group through here, he's always saying, like, if there's a fire, like, you worry about yourself, and that's part of your plan. Like, get out and stay out. Like, don't go back in. And he, like, starts to rattle off, like, don't go back in for your dog or your cat. Don't go back in for your goldfish or your stuffy or whatever it is. Like, get out and stay out. But make that plan with your family.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a couple of weeks ago, maybe even a little bit longer than that, we got asked to go up to the safety village out in Penticton. And I think you guys have done that as well in the past. Usually they, whatever school group goes up, they ask some members from the local fire department to come up to the safety village, and they have their fire safety building, and they run through all the drills and whatnot. And yeah, really, really reiterate that, you know, get out and stay out. If you don't have an exit route that's safe, then go to your window, call for help, go to your patio, right, and scream for help, and then we will come and get you. And just really reinforcing that, you know, make a lot of noise so we know what window you're at or balcony, and we will be coming to get you. And that comes hand in hand with not being afraid. See, like, wearing our masks and our helmets and fully geared up, what we look like, and we're going to sound a little bit different, things like that.
Yeah, I think that Safety Village trip is really, really valuable. Having those tiny homes that the kids can go in, doing evac drills, that's not in their school where they talk about it. Like, this is like a place that looks like a house, and they've got, like, in our local one, just north of us here, they have a two-story multiple, quote, bedroom building. And I've had the pleasure of going up a couple times, and we haven't had a chance to do it lately. I think we sent a crew up once this year, but that's always a really fun event to go and be a part of. The kids get a kick out of it. And there's a lot of info that you can get over to them. So being able to do that live while, you know, firefighters are there, we always bring our gear with us. Like, we'll get dressed up and do the presentation in our uniform. But then when it comes time, like, we'll again show them the entire gear. Like, once you get all of your SCBA on, you do that, like, talk, like, we're going to sound different, we'll look different, and kind of sound like Darth Vader, because everybody loves Star Wars. So you kind of go through all of that and kind of normalize what we're going to look like when they're under a lot of stress from, you know, a potential house fire. So
yeah, absolutely, it's a lot of fun. So yeah, that's gonna be our fire prevention week, what we're doing with our open house and the school stuff, and yeah, it should be a lot of fun.
So with that, we'll take a look back on our past training before we take a bit of a gander forward. So this past week, we actually had one of our hybrid nights. And we concentrated on one of our core skills. So, Scott, why don't you chat about that?
Yeah, it's not one of my core skills, but it's a core skill. Yeah, so, you know, like Ash said, we did a hybrid night. So we do like an ops meeting, about 30 minutes, and then training. So it kind of reduces practice night a little bit. But so those nights are dedicated to kind of truck-based stuff or kind of those quick skills. So that night was going to be... knots. I already forgot, but we did. Yeah, so we did a bunch of different knots. The old saying, don't know knots, tie lots. That's usually my method, but that's not the right method. So yeah, we just went over kind of the basic knots, the family of eights, so the figure eight follow through, figure on a bite, that kind of stuff. Did some prussic knots, prussic work. The clove hitch on different various items. So clove hitch if you're hauling tools up, clove hitch if you're doing it on like a ladder, those sorts of things. Clove hitch on a bike. Yeah, basically it was like so you can quick release clove hitch. And then one of our kind of rope guru guys, I didn't want to give him anything like a sign, because as I said to the group, I'm like, if I say, hey, I want you to teach this, he's not going to teach it. So I just kind of let him do what he wanted to do. As long as it was obviously a knot, everybody could tie. So he kind of, you know, I mean, and he definitely stuck with it. Like he did the alpine butterfly, which is beneficial for us in a lot of different ways, and a directional figure eight. So so the alpine butterfly, it's been a while since I tied it, but yeah, there's that, you know, wrap it around your hand method. I really like that way to do it. So basically it's to put that knot in the middle of the rope so you can tie off to it.
Yeah, I found it, you know, really valuable. I'm like Scott, definitely one of my least favorite things, but, and also admittedly one of my, you know, weakest points as well. So just not something that I do as often. So I even took my chunk of rope home with me and transferred it from my personal truck to the officer truck on my duty this week. So just kind of, you know, keeping it in the forefront and actually getting hands on and just, you know, drilling on some of the simple knots. But, you know, like as we were going through the sessions, they're like, can you do this with your eyes closed? Like, can you do this by feel without watching? And just trying to build up that personal confidence, if you will, going through all of the reps. So yeah, I mean, I found it really, really good. It got, you know, really good feedback from everybody. And like Scott was saying, like having the one session with probably the best rope guy that we have on our team, kind of giving him some creative freedom to teach his way, I think landed the most value as well. So that was really, really good. And like he broke down the reasons why you would want to do it, even with showing like, hey, if this rope is damaged, do we have to, you know, remove the entire system, or can we just like tie a knot around it and still have it in play, or do we have to break everything down? So showing how you can use that and still keep your rope in play where you're not really, you know, sacrificing any of your strength or safety, which is, you know, really good as well.
Yeah, that that tying off the damaged part and like using an alpine butterfly to kind of isolate that broken, that damaged part of the rope, I don't think I've ever seen that or was taught that before. So it's cool. Like, so yeah, basically if it had like a, you know, a severe nick or a cut in it, but you still needed to do the rescue, you can use that alpine butterfly, and basically the damaged part goes inside the bite, and basically that's where it sits. And then there's no pressure on it either way, no tension given to it. So, yeah, it makes it perfectly safe.
Yeah, the other thing that I didn't really think of, you know, he says, like, anytime that you have, you know, any sort of moving rope, you don't want to go rope on rope. And that makes sense, because if you're going to be dragging rope across each other, that's going to be friction. That can cause some problems with the rope. But then he also talked about having metal on metal. So having two beaners back to back, and showing how a non, like a quick release locking carabiner can pop itself off quite easily if the rope system twists. So just having that like back out there in front of us again, like these are like simple things that, you know, you've heard once or twice and you just don't do it, but sort of that why, like show me why this doesn't work, like why this is bad, or show me why this is good. We're all visual learners generally, we're all hands-on learners here, so if you can show me the why this works and the why this doesn't work, and that was one thing that he was, you know, really, really good at. So yeah, again, it was like an hour and a half maybe, where we just kind of cycled through everything. We had groups of three or four. Everybody had their chunk of rope with them, and that's not one of them.
This is not the chunk of rope.
Nope. It's not. Like a... I thought I saw one kicking. Don't use that. Yeah, so that's
the farmer style rope there. Yeah. Farmer's knot. That's my specialty.
Yeah, generally you throw three or four knots in a row and call it a day. So yeah, I mean that was kind of it for us. What did you guys get up to, Todd? Do you guys have anything on the agenda?
No, not really, actually. So this last practice, we just had to button up some of our hose testing. So unfortunately, we had to take practice night, which we don't like doing, but we just didn't get it done in time. So we just banged off all the big hose and got it all tested and reloaded. And that takes the whole night, unfortunately. But it was something that we needed to get done. And then we just changed some of our hose lays on the back of the truck. We have our 2.5-inch blitz line. And the way it was stacked, we didn't really like it. So we talked about it briefly with the officers, and we just changed it. So we have a single stack, just a flat load with two ears to pull it out for our blitz line. So it's 200 feet. And then beside it, we have just a regular flat load of extra 2.5, just in case you need to drag it for extra length, or if you're taking it up to an FDC or something like that. So just strictly off the rear hose bed. So it's made it a little bit easier for operating. Especially we talked about, well, you know, if we need a big water line immediately and we have low manpower, it's still very simple to deploy with one man. Having those loops in there, those two dog ears, you can grab them and rip it out easily and deploy it, and then the pump operator can start sending you water ASAP. So just kind of finessed it a little bit and ran through the motions, make sure to deploy it okay, and changed everything over on the trucks. So unfortunately, that was our night. But we're going to be jumping back into training here coming up. So,
yeah, you know, I think having the opportunity to have those nights as well is still really important. You know, we always try to, I don't want to say jam pack our training as much as we can, but we all understand the value of getting out there and getting hands on. But these sort of nights do pop up, and there's still a lot of value that can be taken from that, right? Like, you know, even if you have groups of guys working on getting the hose tested, you have some people that you fold in on, hey, we're going to be changing this hose load, like, what do you think about it? Folding some of the other, you know, maybe senior firefighters in, just having a quick chat and probably demoing it once or twice. So now instead of just, ah, we're just going to throw it up there, hey, let's shoulder a couple hose loads and see what this flakes out like. So it's really easy to take what can be a pretty mundane practice because you're taking care of some of the shit that you've missed, and you can still fold some quick skill sets in there and make it, you know, valuable for everybody, which is obviously what we're out here to do.
Yeah, 100%. And that was, it was actually really good because a few of us have been kind of eyeballing and we weren't super happy with it, but it works. But we just haven't had a lot of big fires lately where we've actually had to grab the blitz line and use it. So while we had it all off, we're like, hey, this is our moment to change it. We've got enough guys here. We can discuss it, make that operational change and get it done. So we got approval from the Chiefs and they're all for it. So then again, we flaked out a few times, make sure everyone's happy with it. And it worked good. And it really tied in just watching some of the newer guys chat about it and go take a look at it afterwards and deploy it. Just hearing them troubleshoot and think why we're pulling it and how we're pulling it is really good to see because they haven't had that opportunity yet. So it was really good. And then we actually had five of our new members just start the 1001 process as well. So unfortunately, they're firing up the classroom sessions, which aren't as fun, but one of those things that has to get done. So we had them jump on that and hopefully they'll be ripping through the program.
What was your load on your blitz line before?
Before it was just a flat lay of the 2.5. So we had 300 feet disconnected. And then on top of it, we had the 200 feet pre-connected. But there was no finesse in where it was laid. It was across the width of 3. So it was basically they're just grabbing it and running that 200 feet out. That just sucks. So that's why we stacked a bit better. So you can actually grab a loop and shoulder it if you want, or just grab the loops and run. And then you're just flaking more hose out with you as you're running. So it just, it's better hose management for one person.
So currently with your new setup, do you have anything pre-connected or flake it out and connect whatever you need?
Yeah, so we still have the 200 feet, 2.5 pre-connected. Again, that's just a single stack. And then to the left of it, we have 2 stacks of 2.5 just for the flat load stuff for extra hose and whatnot if we need it, or if we actually need to do some sort of a forward lay with it for whatever reason. But we shouldn't because we've got all of our 4-inch supply line for that. So it seems like mostly all of our supply line is all the 4-inch. If we're doing forward or reverse lays, every truck's got it. And the 2.5 is usually for ripping off an extra length for an exposure control, or if we need a second line for big water for a ground monitor or something, we can pull that hose from there because we've got a smooth bore on our blitz line. And then if we need it for our FDCs as well. Because we carry 2 donut rolls in the side compartment for the pump operator to connect to the FDC currently. It works okay, but depending on your apparatus placement, you're going to need some more. So then we'd flake it from the rear, right? So just working on placement of hose with the truck setups that we have, our new truck that we'll have, we're going to have a side pre-connect next to our 1¾. That's already plumbed for that FDC, so it'll be real quick and easy to connect to if we need it. So
nice. Well, if you don't feel like you had enough hands-on practice loading hose, we're about to be loading an entire fire truck this week. Likely so. We've chatted about on past episodes our new engine will be arriving, so we've got the date and the time. So I know everybody in our ops meeting, there's a couple of questions like, so what's our plan to get this baby in service? And I know everybody wants to see that thing out in service immediately. Getting the hose loaded up is going to be something that we can do. We have everything here already. There's a couple pieces of kit that we're still a little shy on, but getting that thing loaded up and ready to rock is going to be, we'll start in 2 days.
Awesome. That's good. So when you guys get it, are you guys going to be running guys through some driver skills with it as well, being the new apparatus and slightly different because it's a custom cab?
Yeah, it actually works out really well because this week we were going to do driver training anyway. So these next 2 weeks is driver training. So one of our captains, who's also a Class 1 driver, he's taken 2 or 3 other guys that are going to, they're all going to basically take one of our trucks and take members out. And we have a driving course and they're going to go through the whole deal, get signed off. But the new engine that's coming, it's coming at a perfect time because originally it wasn't going to be on the driver training slate because we didn't know it was going to be here. But now that it is, now we can do that cab over driving because all of our other engines are commercial cabs, so not cab over. So it drives more like a regular vehicle, but this is going to be totally different.
Yeah, like in our previous driver training, you would have to drive the engine and then drive one of our water tenders because they obviously drive different, they handle different, different wheelbase and different, that's what I'm looking for, center of gravity with that big water supply in the back. So adding that third apparatus in there with the custom cab definitely drives a lot different. So it's really perfect timing to get that thing out there. Having had the chance to drive one already, and like I'm a fairly confident driver, it is a world of difference. They're just overall wider. Like the actual like cab itself is wider. Your position is way further to the left. You're kind of sitting like right over top of the outboard axle. And you're also kind of right above the front bumper. So it's going to be a bit of a learning curve, and I know everybody's going to want to respond in that truck immediately. So it's going to be a challenge to kind of throttle that back. And hey, like we obviously want to use it, but let's make sure that we're doing this safe as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that's the fun thing. Like we've got a really old cab over, and just watching the guys when we do our driver training nights as well, like they'll nail the course in the other truck and they get into that thing and then they're cutting it too tight because it turns on a dime. So yeah, your turning points are a lot different. So it's challenging if you haven't driven that truck for a while and then you suddenly jump in it. And same with myself, I have been driving them for a long time. And then you go jump in that other truck and it's like, oh, you don't have to cut it as or go as wide as you think and whatnot. We have one truck in our fleet that thing steers like shit. It's just, it hardly makes a big roundabout where all the other ones, just, you can dial it. So thankfully it's at the other hall. I don't have to deal with that very often, but apparently when we get our new truck, it's going to be now my new truck. So that sucks. I was bitching to the Chiefs the other day. I said, so when we get that new custom cab, how about you guys just keep our current engine one and put that into unit three, and I'll just keep 192 for my haul. I'll be happy with that. Like, no, that's not going to happen. Shit.
Yeah, nice. You know, I was having a chat with one of our retired captains last week there, and he runs a trucking business. He's got many trucks. He's got you know, the regular commercial cabs. He's got the cab overs. He's like, yeah, you know, I don't know about you guys, like, stick with something that works. And I'm like, wow, you know, it's kind of the same thing. Like, why have all of the same tools, right? Like, if you can build that Swiss Army knife of tools and skills where you're covering a lot of ground differently, I think that also works. I mean, he also laughed. He says, yeah, no, like, they're just overall safer. They're bigger, but not bigger. Like you can transport more people. You can get more storage capacity because you're saving so much of the wheelbase with that cab over design. And again, for me, it just landed back on safety. Safety was key there. And they're sweet. And we're back. Had a little internet connectivity issue, but I think we got everything sorted out. So. Yeah, so that's going to be one of our training sessions will be driver training. So we got, like Scott said, we got three instructors, three different types of apparatus. So we'll get the whole crew out there hands-on, testing and training with all of that. And while those guys are working on that, what do we have on the other side?
We're going to be doing some different search options. So we're going to be doing maybe the standard search. I've never been a big fan of the old standard search. So just do a right-hand search and hopefully you find somebody. Obviously, we're big on the VIS. We're big on the kind of the newer methods of going down the hallway, doing an orientated search, holding the hallway with the hose line, and then sending guys in to search individual rooms. Rather than, I remember the old days, you pull the hose line right in with you and
you get hung up in the bed, and then you'd be knocking over dressers and get stuck in there because the nozzle wouldn't get back out. So these kind of newer methods, I don't even know how new they are anymore. They're getting several years old now, but they're just proven to be faster and more efficient. So we're going to be doing that in our burn building, but we're going to be using our Battle Fogger 2000. I don't know if it's 2000, but it pumps in a lot of smoke. We're still in that wildfire danger rating, so I don't really want to do a live burn yet, but it's going to be our kind of precursor to some live fire stuff.
Yeah, I'm really excited to get back in there doing some hands-on training. Using that battle fogger is great. Knocks down on some of the old carcinogens when you're doing the live fire training. So, and it is very realistic. It smokes stuff out fast. Using some of those different search methods, just getting back in there working as a crew again, shifting away from wildfire season, but still being, aware and making sure that we're, out there training smart for a couple more weeks, I think. We're definitely going to be ramping up the burn building after that. That's going to be great. So we'll do that for 2 weeks as well. 2 weeks back to back while, the one crew cycles through driver training, the other crew is over there, and then vice versa. And then we're going to end up our month with a fuel training exercise as well.
I think one thing going, like you're talking with the searches and stuff, like using the fog machine, it's a super valuable tool, especially just getting back to the basics for your searches and different styles of searches. Because before, if we weren't doing it in an actual burn building, remember, trying to black out the mask and something like that's great if guys are really dialed and know what they're doing. But trying to teach the newer members, like, hey, like, this is the realistic search. This is what we're looking for. This is how what you're doing. It's a bit more realistic because then that way you can actually see a little bit still in front of you. If you see a victim, you can deal with it. And if you're making a mistake, you can be caught easily and safely and then learn from it. And then you can still use the hose to hydraulically vent or whatever if you need to, right? And it just gives you that really good simulation because that smoke, even though it's white smoke, it's still very, very thick. And it's this is a better tool to use.
Yeah, I find too, you can, with that kind of smoke machine stuff, you can kind of put your head into like a void space where you're not really in a void space, but an area where the smoke isn't as thick to be able to see, like you're kind of in that zone of like, I'm starting to lose it. When you're fully covered, like when your mask is fully covered, like you said, Todd, that's not really realistic. There's lots of times where you're in a fire, even if it's heavy smoke, you can find areas where it's going to lighten up and you'll be able to see a second and breathe and figure out where you're or reorientate yourself and then carry on. But just covering your face up fully and then going to town is I think I've only ever been in maybe one fire that it's ever been like that. And even then it was only for a few seconds before it kind of lifted a bit and then I could see a little bit more.
Well, that's just it, right? Like when you like I've been in a few fires where smoke is shit, it's down low, but we do things to mitigate that. You get your flow path going, you start venting, and it clears. As you get approaching that the seat of the fire, guess what? There's some light from the fire. You can start seeing what you're doing. So it's just, it helps really reinforcing those positive skills when you're learning rather than with that total blackout mask. People start getting frustrated because they're failing or they're making mistakes, they're banging into things. It doesn't build that confidence.
Yeah, I think, again, the only other thing to add to that is, when we are building these training environments and these training exercises, we talk about training to failure, but we also talk about being able to succeed and being realistic. And again, like, how often are you in those completely darked out searches? I mean, they are a thing. Like, they do happen, and you need to train for it. Yeah. But, like, your bread and butter interior push isn't going to be to the floor, zero visibility. Do those instances happen where you start to lose vis? Absolutely. And do we need to train for it? Yes. But you're not going to get the best result out of newer firefighters when they can't see anything. So make it realistic. Make it so you can't see down a hallway. Yes, I can see something that's laying on the floor, you know, because it's down, maybe it's down to waist level, maybe it's down, even when you're crawling, your head's still in it, but when you get right on top of something, you can still see, hey, this is, you know, a nightstand, this is a cushion, and this is a person. So being able to, like, tell the difference of something that's directly in front of you, you're just going to get, I think, more, like, more buy-in. It's going to land better with those newer firefighters. Hey, like, I can't just stand up and walk out of here because my head's going to be in smoke. But what I can do is get myself low, work really close to the patient, and then get myself out, and I'm following a hose line, because as soon as I start to action the rescue, now I'm kind of back up, like, I'm not standing up, but I'm back up in a, like, an attack crawl position where your, you know, head's back up in the smoke and you can't see, so you have to follow the hose line. And back to Scott's point, like, being able to leave the hose line for a search is so much more effective. You know, the only time that you know, really wouldn't be a thing is if it was like a large open area, like our truck bay or a warehouse or something huge where, like, where you can't get away from the hose line. That is your lifeline. But if you're going down an apartment building and there's one way in, one way out, and you can anchor right in the hallway there, I think that's great. Or if it's just a home with, like, I'm thinking of my house. I've got a bathroom to the left and three bedrooms going down the hallway to the right. It's, I mean, you could easily tackle that quickly with, you know, not having to bring in hose line every time that you enter a new room. You just anchor right at the doorway. You keep somebody fresh on that nozzle, and you can cycle out your guys. Keep everybody fresh is great.
Yeah, and absolutely. Like, back to the, like, the training to succeed as well. Like, you know, if you're going into your bread and butter house with the fog machine going, and you come across a closed door, are you going to search it? Or are you not going to search it? If you choose to search it, you know what? You're going to open that up. It's probably not going to be smoke in there. So you can quickly do a search, and then out you go. Or if you're blacked out, you're suffering through that bullshit trying to go through that room, which is a time and place to do that and learn and build your confidence being blind and going by feel. But again, you need to get to that level. So by having that fog machine going, it's just far better training.
Yeah, and, you know, back to that realism, like, you know, we always preach, like we just said at the onset of the podcast here, like, if you're closing your doors before you leave, if you're closing your doors when you're sleeping, if you get to that door and you're making a search in there, is the person who's going to anchor out in the hallway going to leave the door wide open once the people go in? Or are we going to use some door control, keep those, you know, smoke and gases out of there? And again, you retain your visibility because the door's been closed, so it's not getting, you know, saturated, like maybe across the hall where that door was left open. So again, there's, you know, the more realism of it is great. But again, the realism of it.
Yeah, and it's like anything, like we do, you know, like there's multiple things you're doing by that. Like, it's now, you know, it's a survival space. So if you need to use it to fall back on for a rescue, or if you need to evacuate, you know, you can fall back to that space. Maybe that's your exit point now. And we all know, like, the number one goal is getting to the seat of that fire as quickly as we can and knocking it down and getting rid of all that smoke and carcinogens. However, but there is times where, you know, you may need to pull back, or that maybe that secondary team is coming in and doing the search while your primary attack is rocking that fire. But our cookie cutter homes for these house fires, it's usually pretty quick. We can get to see that fire pretty damn fast.
Yeah, that's kind of the beauty of that BC box. Generally, like, you're a hose length and a half from the front door to anywhere in that structure that's going to be, you know, actioning the seat of the fire. Not to mention some exterior water application, blah blah blah. Like, there's a lot of things that can be done in conjunction with that search team, whether it's at the same time or it's one after another. But
yeah, back to basic fire ground and tactics, right? Like, we could do another podcast all on that. Like, there's so many things to be looking at and tasking your crews on. So specifically with search, it's just a win doing that way with that battle fogger 4000 or whatever Scott calls it.
Yeah, I don't think we have the 4000 model. I think it's only 2000. No, I don't know what it is. It's awesome, I think. couple grand. First time I was like, ooh, that's a lot of money for a smoke machine. But I'm used to a smoke machine like a Halloween smoke machine, not this monster thing that's like can do like a whole warehouse basically.
It could do a whole fire hole. Because that's how the guys tested it. Like, ah, we'll see if we can smoke out the upstairs. So no one was up there. Closed everything off. There was somebody that was on a vent where they could open up an upstairs vent, and they tested it. And yeah, one of our members, I think we said this on a previous podcast, somebody's driving by, hits the binders. They had to stop somewhere before practice, but they see smoke billowing out of the upstairs window. And they're like, some idiot's burning the fire hall down. I should probably swing in. But yeah, I mean, that thing's going to be great for training. We use it at seminar. Like Scott was saying, like, you know, like, how much do I buy into this thing? Is it great? Is it that sort of Halloween? No, it rocks the smoke. It was pumping enough for two search buildings at the same time. There was like a cool little manifold that they built for it. It's going to be a great addition to training, where you don't have to have the live fire, but you still get that realism.
And we can also combine the kind of clean burning pallets with that smoke. So it'll you know, kind of be twofold. So we can have some of that, introduce some of that smoke and also those clean burning wood pallets. Because the problem is once wood starts burning, like when the pallets start burning, once they get up to heat, there's really no smoke in them anymore. So it doesn't really even represent a structure fire anymore. It's just hot.
Yeah, absolutely. Like we have live fire coming up north of us here in a couple weeks, and same thing. Like the first fire gets a little smoky. After that, it's just hot with very little smoke because the pallets is burned so clean and efficient. It's not as realistic by any means.
Yeah. So those are our two training sessions coming up for the next couple weeks. And then, like I mentioned, we do have our field training exercise, which I think we can probably tell what it is, but we should save it and do a bit of a recap afterwards. Yeah, we're getting a little late in the night here, so something to look forward to there. We get approached every fall from our local Parks and Rec. They obviously look after the arena. The arena comes with multiple challenges, obviously. Having people inside of it, ice, and what makes ice? The old ammonias. So that's a pretty serious situation there. We train with them every season, and we were approached this year, and they want to do a live alarm. And they don't want to hit on, like, we've got a high-level leak, because that's like, very, very in depth. But what they are going to do is like a low level alarm, which still needs to be evac'd, and they're going to have like live patients. It's actually going to be right in the middle of a hockey practice. They're going to reach out to all of the local parents and say, "Hey, like this practice is on us. We're not going to charge you for the ice, but there is going to be a half an hour interruption right in the middle of practice, and it's going to come in." Like they'll phone us and we'll do our fake page out and we'll roll on down there like we normally would. We'll stagger our response and yeah, so we'll do that. We don't really know much more about that. I'm going to chat with them as the month progresses here just to make sure everything's dialed. But yeah, we'll probably concentrate on like that whole thing would be for a future podcast.
Yeah, those type of training nights, if you can tie in some more members of the public who are in the know. That's fantastic training for our members on the department because it throws our guys off the game a little bit, thinking that it's all just we know it's obviously training event, but all of a sudden you're rolling in and you see all these people now you have to actually deal with rather than a normal training that might just be a couple of bystanders that we've roped into the training event. Whereas this is we need to have them evacuate to the proper areas and need somebody to check on them and do your searches and the whole work. So that'll be really good to see.
Yeah, and like the other like positive thing for the arena staff is like they've done drills, but they've never done drills with they brought people in to do drills with, but they've never done it live with actual townsfolk. So this is going to be cool for them as well as for us. So yeah, look for that end of the month, early November. We'll chat about that. Yeah, and there's nothing else you guys have to bring up. I think we'll probably roll into our shoutouts. So why don't we do that? Todd, tell me a story about Modus.
Well, Modus, a fine company out east, a big supporter of us, and we're a big supporter of them. Claim to fame is the Snagger tool. Of course, they've got a whole variety of products. Mini spanners, soft entry. They've got a lot of textiles as well, the bags. Got a radio strap coming up as well, which we're currently testing for them as well. Ash is showing it there. We've got the gloves, which we're a big, big fan of. These are fantastic gloves. We're just wearing them all night, a bunch of us at the hall the other night. And they're definitely, I think, my favorite glove I've had. And they've lasted a long time. Yeah. We're not going to talk about any spelling mistakes there. But yeah, Modus. Love them. Go to their website, order everything. Fantastic products. DTFF5 will get you 5% off the order.
Sweet. Scott, if you were drinking coffee, what would you be drinking?
Wolf Tree. Wolf Tree coffee. Out of Oliver, we have our initial attack blend, which is a blend of a few different beans developed by three awesome people.
Connoisseurs, if you
drink coffee. Drinkers of coffee. The best part about that is that every $2 from every pound goes to the Honor House / Honor Ranch Society to help pay for their facilities. So Wolf Tree Coffee, check them out on Facebook, and they will deliver locally and regionally, ship where.
Yeah, I think shipping, there's a pound rating to get certain amounts of shipping, but they will ship anywhere. I don't think they're going to ship international for a pound, but they do have, I think if you go on their website, they'll chat about what their shipping is, but they will ship anywhere.
Yeah, talk about some stocking stuff or things. Some 4 pounds or half
pounds. Yeah, 100%. They are doing... I forget where they were saying. I was chatting with them the other day, and they do have some smaller package quantity for a business. So I think that's a great idea. John, Stop the Bleeding.
Stop the Bleeding. So stopthebleed.org or .ca or .com will take you all to these multiple links. They're across the board. Go online and find out if you want to become an instructor. There's information on becoming an instructor. And also you can check out our YouTube on it as well. Three major methods of massive hemorrhage control are tourniquet application, wound packing, and direct pressure. Make sure you have a good tourniquet. Make sure it's out of the plastic wrapper and carry more than one.
Sweet. And then lastly, you have us. You can find us on... Oh, not lastly. Well, there is some country music to chat about. Scott seems to remember when I didn't, so...
Ted Olson, once again, has a new song. Another one. But I forgot what it's called again. It's 20 songs. But check it out on Spotify. Ted Olson on Spotify and anywhere else you listen to music. He is currently out on the road. He's in Cheyenne, Wyoming. That sounds country-ish.
Yeah, I seen they're traveling, and they had a pit stop in Utah, which I said to the wife, I'm like, hey, he's in Utah. That's where some of her family's from. And then, but they were just passing on through. So, yeah, the old Tanner Olson band there, awesome group. So, check them out anywhere that you stream your music.
Thinking too much, Susa. Thinking too much.
Perfect. And now, lastly, you have us. Oh, I don't think we can do that. Yeah, that's right. We're everywhere on the old socials, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikToks, LinkedIn, I have no idea. Check us out on all of our socials. Give us a like, share, subscribe. We're pushing a lot of traffic to our YouTube, and that's been going really well. So thank you to all of you who have been heading over there. We can't do what we do without you guys supporting that. So thank you all very, very much. Oh, absolutely, John.
Yeah, and don't forget, we also have shirts. So our DTFF shirts, the Moose shirt, you can see the logo on our Facebook site. You can go to DCFFstore.com and yeah, check out our shirts and order some through us.
Beautiful. Anything else, Scott?
Nope. Good night.
Todd?
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you once again. As always, stay safe. Stay DTFF.